Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Stolen: How to Save the World from Financialization is a 2019 nonfiction work of political economy and Marxist analysis by Grace Blakely. It examines how financialization became the dominant form of capitalism in the UK and the wider Anglo-American world after the crisis of the 1970s, and how that shift reshaped households, firms, and governments, rather than treating finance as a narrow sector. Blakely presents it as a system that reorganized economic life through debt, asset inflation, privatization, and shareholder-driven corporate behavior. The book argues that the 2007 to 2008 financial crisis exposed the fragility of this model, and that the recovery largely protected financial power while ordinary people absorbed the costs through austerity, stagnant wages, and rising inequality. Its purpose is both explanatory and political, to show how the system works and to outline a democratic socialist response through the socialization of finance. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, financialization as capitalism's response to the crisis of the 1970s. A central claim of the book is that financialization was not an accidental policy drift, but capitalism's strategic response to the profitability crisis of the 1970s. Blakely treats the rise of finance as a structural transformation in which capital sought new ways to sustain accumulation after older industrial models ran into limits. This framing matters because it shifts attention away from finance as a technical specialist field and toward finance as a class project with political purposes. In her account, deregulation, privatization, and capital market expansion were not neutral reforms. They were tools that allowed wealth and power to be reorganized in favor of owners of capital. By placing this shift in historical context, the book gives readers a way to understand why later crises were not anomalies, but predictable outcomes of a system built around speculative growth and dependency on debt. The argument is distinctly Marxist in that it links financial innovation to broader capitalist contradictions, rather than to isolated policy mistakes. Secondly, how finance reshaped households, corporations, and the state. Blakely shows that financialization changed the behavior of almost every major economic actor. Households were pushed toward borrowing to maintain living standards as wages stagnated and welfare states were retrenched. Corporations increasingly prioritized shareholder value, buybacks, and financial returns over long-term investment, which weakened productive capacity and contributed to sluggish growth. Governments, meanwhile, relied more heavily on private finance and market mechanisms to deliver services and fund investment, which reduced democratic control over economic priorities. This is one of the book's most important contributions because it connects abstract macroeconomic change to everyday life. Debt, housing costs, precarious work, and underfunded public services are not treated as separate social problems, but as effects of the same governing logic. The book argues that financialization normalized dependence on credit and asset markets, making growth appear healthy even when it rested on fragile foundations. That helps explain why apparent prosperity before the crisis masked deep structural vulnerability. Thirdly, the 2007 to 2008 crash as proof of a broken growth model. The financial crisis is presented not merely as a recession, but as a revealing event that exposed the instability of finance-led growth. Blakely argues that the boom preceding the crash was sustained by debt expansion, complex financial engineering, and asset bubbles, especially in housing and credit markets. Once those supports failed, the costs for socialized banks were rescued, but workers and households faced unemployment, austerity, and declining public provision. This sequence is crucial to the book because it shows how crisis management protected the system that caused the problem. The recovery, in Blakely's view, did not correct the underlying imbalance between finance and productive investment. Instead, it intensified inequality by preserving financial dominance. The crisis therefore becomes evidence for the book's broader thesis that finance has absorbed economic power while externalizing risk onto society. Readers come away with a sharper understanding of why post-crash policies did not produce a genuine reset and why the underlying model remains unstable. Fourthly, a class struggle interpretation of contemporary economic life, rather than treating financialization as a purely technical or managerial issue. Blakely interprets it through class conflict. Finance is presented as the central terrain on which contemporary class struggle takes place, because control over credit, investment, and ownership structures determines who benefits from economic growth. This lens helps explain why reforms often fail powerful financial institutions can block policies that threaten their interests, just as trade unions once shaped industrial relations in an earlier era. The book uses this comparison to show that modern finance is not passive infrastructure, but an organized political force. It protects inherited wealth, shapes public policy, and narrows the room for democratic intervention. By making class relations visible, the book challenges the idea that inequality or austerity are unfortunate side effects. Instead, they are shown as consequences of a system designed to discipline labor and preserve the claims of capital. This is a major reason the book stands out within popular economics writing, since it treats economic outcomes as politically contested rather than technocratic. Lastly, democratic socialism and the step-by-step socialization of finance. The book does not stop at critique. It argues for a political alternative built around the socialization of finance. Blakely proposes that if finance is the core mechanism of capitalist power, then meaningful reform must involve democratic control over banks, credit allocation, and investment decisions. This is not presented as an abstract revolutionary slogan, but as a practical route toward reorienting economic activity around social needs rather than private returns. The broader implication is that public ownership and stronger state capacity are necessary to redirect capital toward stable employment, public investment, and ecological transition. The book therefore links economic democracy to climate and social justice concerns, suggesting that a finance-dominated system cannot resolve stagnant wages, inequality, or environmental breakdown. This forward-looking dimension is important because it gives the book a policy horizon. It is not simply about diagnosing failure, but about specifying where power must move if capitalism is to be replaced by something more democratic. The result is a political economy argument with direct reformist and socialist implications. In conclusion, Stolen: How to Save the World from Financialization will be most useful to readers who want a clear, politically committed account of how modern capitalism came to be organized around debt, asset markets, and financial power. It is especially suited to readers interested in Marxist economics, democratic socialism, political economy, and the post-2008 policy debate. The book offers practical intellectual value by connecting large-scale macroeconomic shifts to familiar experiences such as household debt, weak wage growth, housing pressure, and public sector austerity. It helps readers see these as linked outcomes of a single model rather than isolated failures. What makes it stand out from many books on capitalism and crisis is its narrow but forceful focus on financialization as the key mechanism of contemporary class power. Blakely does not present finance as one problem among many. She treats it as the central structure that shapes growth, inequality, and political constraint. That gives the book a sharper political edge than general critiques of neoliberalism, and a clearer reform agenda than purely diagnostic economic histories. Readers looking for a rigorous, accessible, and explicitly left-wing analysis of capitalism after the financial crash will find it distinctive and consequential. If you would like to support Grace Blakely, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.